What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 281 on this Monday, June 29th, 2026. Josh Callaway, Tom Green here with you. 68 days from kickoff. We're getting back to football today. We've had a lot of other stuff to talk about with baseball's incredible run, even going back to the tail end of the softball season. We haven't had to talk that much football, Tom and I, the last 5-6 weeks. We're getting back to it today. We're less than 10 weeks from the opener. What's our biggest confident point right now on Oklahoma? What worries us the most about Oklahoma right now with less than 10 weeks ago until the start of the season? We will discuss on the show today our overall feeling with this team as we get ready to flip the calendar into July here in a couple of days. Media days right around the corner. Fall camp obviously coming up in about a month plus or so. And we'll type a little bit of basketball housekeeping as well. SEC slate been revealed. Any takeaways there? We'll get into that a little bit as well on the back end. So it's a nice football show. The season coming up slowly moving toward us, and we'll be with you every single day at Sooners Illustrated. That's why you subscribe at oklahoma.247sports.com. Use the promo code SoonersPod60, all one word, for listening on podcast. That'll get you a 60% discount to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network. Be with us every single day. Tom, Brody, Lusk, Colin Kennedy, myself, and we're getting close to it. July here just a couple of days, so we're getting closer. Season just around the corner. All right, let's get into it, Tom. Like I said, I mean, it's a good thing because a lot of times, or you know, sometimes June can really be the dog days. There's not much going on. OU baseball took care of that for us. Incredible run to the national title. Obviously, Colin and I cleaned that up last week on Thursday. They won the Natty a week ago tonight. Feels like longer than a week ago in some ways. In fact, I was still in Omaha this time last week, but we've had plenty of other stuff going on between the end of softball season, kind of how that abruptly ended, and this great baseball run. And I figured let's kind of just get back to football today, kind of a resetting of football, if you will. Like I said, 68 days from the opener, less than 10 weeks. Still plenty of time. You still got a summer in front of you, everyone, you know, but the mind starts to shift a little bit when you get into July. Media day is coming up just around the corner. So I figured let's just tee this up, a little bit of a temperature reset, temperature check. For you, Tom, right now, July coming up in a couple of days, what is Oklahoma's biggest strength? What are you most confident in with this team? You know, with spring ball, we're a couple months away, removed from spring ball. Fall camp's coming up in about 5 or 6 weeks. As it stands now, and again, we're 10 weeks away from them playing games, where are you most confident? This area is going to be Oklahoma leans on. I have no concerns with this part of the roster or beyond the roster, if you want, right now with Oklahoma.
Yeah, so I have an answer that, like, it might not make for great podcasting because it's just not super exciting, but then I have, like, another one. My kind of boring answer is special teams because you're bringing back the best kicker in the country, arguably.
Yeah, I agree.
An all-SEC punter, and Doug Deacon has just elevated that unit each of the years that he's been there so far. And obviously, you know, you're bringing Isaiah Satania back. He was electric on punt returns last season. You've got some guys that you feel can – you know, help you actually return kicks this year, which Oklahoma was literally returned fewer kicks than anybody else in the country last season. So I think that's going to be a huge strength of this team. But just overall, like, with what Brent Venables has done building up this defense, like, I have zero doubt that this is going to be a great defense. Mm-hmm. Will it be as good as last year's is kind of the big question looming over. Like, what's the depth going to look like between the ones and the twos there? Like, certainly you're stronger at some spots than you are at others, but I have very little doubt that this defense is going to be a, you know, playoff contending defense once again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the layup obvious answer is just in general the defense, right? I mean, I don't anticipate the defense taking much of a step back. Like you said, will it be as good? I don't know. That remains to be seen. You're replacing some big names. I mean, R. Mason Thomas is an obvious. Those two D tackles with Dominic Williams, Grayson Halton, Robert Spears Jennings, who played a lot of football for you. He's gone. Kendall Daniels, who I loved at that cheetah spot, was like the perfect prototypical cheetah. You don't have him. I mean, you're losing some big pieces, obviously. But I feel like you're not going to have much of a step back. To be more specific, I really think the defensive line in particular is going to be really good again. The question is going to be, can they have that D-tack room be what it was last year with that quartet of guys? But I still feel pretty good about it. I mean, David Stone and Jane Jackson are arguably your two best players on the team. If you were to rank the top 10 players, I think they both have to be in the top 5 at worst, right? I mean, they're both big time players. David Stone, if you're into this sort of thing, was the number one defensive tackle in the EA Sports game, the college football game. So that gives you an idea of how good those guys are. But what does the depth behind them look like? It's a lot of unproven guys. You bring in a Bishop Thomas, Trent Wilson in year two. We talked a lot about Nigel Smith back in the spring. Can a couple of these guys pop for you and be something? Tank Carrington, maybe even as a true freshman, maybe, I don't know. Can a couple of those guys step up for you? I feel like more than likely, yes, that a couple will. But, you know, and then on the edge, I love Taylor Wine. I'm all in on Danny Okoye. Give me all the Danny Okoye stock that's available if there's any left. And then PJ Adebore in year four. Wyatt Gilmore is probably a guy that we don't talk enough about, you know, it coming into getting an older player in the program, been around for a while now. Like, you feel like defensive line, if I was going to be specific, somewhere on the defense, that's probably the group, Todd Bates, Miguel Chavis, Rooms, that I just – it's hard to have any kind of fear that they're not going to be really good in those spots again. As good as last year, I don't know, but they'll be really good, right? I mean, that's a fair assessment at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the defensive line is going to be really stout again. I think pound for pound, David Stone and Jaden Jackson as your two starters compared to Grayson Holt and Dominic Williams is probably an upgrade. Mm-hmm. But the question is, like, what was that quartet look like compared to this year's quartet? I think it's kind of the big question there. For me, if we want to get specific on the defense, now that, you know, the dust has seemingly settled, I think the linebacker room getting Owen Heineke, that extra year of eligibility, having Kip Lewis back, having Cole Sullivan come in. I think that trio is probably better than the trio that Oklahoma had last year, just in terms of upside and, you know, what Owen Heineke was able to do in kind of a part-time starter role. And really, you know, take command of that defense and emerge like he did. And obviously Kip Lewis, you know, leading tackle on the team, you know, just a rolling ball with butcher knives, is a analogy I like to hear a lot. I just think that this linebacker core is in a lot better spot than we thought it was, you know, 6 months ago when we were talking about, you know, offseason preview stuff.
Yeah, I agree totally. Getting Owen Heineke back was huge, obviously, with that whole saga. And then, you know, Kip Lewis is awesome. He's a great player. He's been around a long time. And so, yeah, having Kip back is obviously massive. Let me ask you this, and we're going to do biggest concerns in a minute. And I imagine a lot of those are going to be on the offensive side because there's just question marks there. But let me flip it before we do that. Where on offense are you most confident? Like, what area of the offense? Is it Mateer in his second year? Is it what they've done at wide receiver, tight end, O-line? Even running backs, maybe, if you want to go there. I mean, where offensively are you most sure is not going to be a problem? Because I feel like you could make an argument for a few.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough just because, like, offensively, it feels like there's so many parts that need to, like, work together for the offense to be better. Sure. I think probably the biggest question mark, you know, might still be tight end just because, like, I'm very confident that they have upgraded that tight end room, but until we see it put in motion, like I think that is, you know, maybe not, it's hard to say.
Honestly, probably be offensive line, right? If you're going to say one group that you feel the best about, I mean, you're bringing back a lot of your starters, you're losing Fabetchi Wiwu, who's been really good, but you still have, you go and get Amarian Harris, Heath Ozaida back, Peyton Joseph. I think the depth is a fair question on the offensive line. If you were to have 2-3 injuries, what does it look like? But that's probably true of almost anywhere in college football these days on the offensive line. I mean, if you had to pick a position group that offensively, if I was ranking them, I think I'd probably put offensive line number one. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. Assuming health. The wide receiver group, I think, is probably the top unit on that offensive side of the ball.
I disagree.
Because you're bringing back Isaiah Satan, you're bringing in a big target like Parker Livingston, you know, Trell Harris, and then even guys a little bit further down the line, like what we saw from, you know, Mackenzie Alleen in the spring, Elijah Thomas taking a step forward, Jermichael Carter, when he comes back and he's fully healthy and good to go, is a guy that's in his second year in there too. We've had this conversation about the wide receiver room a few times over the last few years. It's like, if they can stay healthy, like there's a lot of talent there. And I think that there's more talent there this year than there was last year. If I had to like say the position group on the offense side that I think has the highest upside, maybe, or just the most talent in the room, might be the wide receiver room right now. But it's the offensive line is just so hard to kind of gauge, because like what we saw from a lot of those guys last year when they were like true or redshirt freshmen, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, they had their moments, but there was also some growing pains. And we've heard, you know, about the progress that they've made, but I think until you actually see what it looks like, it's hard for me to like put my chest out there and be like, yeah, this offensive line is going to be the best unit on that side of the ball. But I think if that offensive line is as good as they hope it is, the ceiling for this offense raises considerably.
There's no secret. It's going to be a team led by their defense again. Because it's just the conversation is a complete opposite on defense, where you look at every spot and you're kind of like, you feel pretty good. I mean, cornerback, they're bringing back basically everyone, right? I mean, it's in great spot there. You have Peyton Bowen back at safety, along with, you know, Boganowski maybe coming up. Reggie Powers, you feel good about him at Cheetah, and maybe some of the other options they have there. You feel pretty good about everywhere on defense, whereas offense, you're kind of like, you don't feel bad everywhere, but right. it's fair.
There's
to
more questions.
No. Yeah, 100%. So let's flip.
Just because the offense, you know, did not live up to expectations last year. And I know a lot of that was because of the injury to John. But, you know, there were holes on that offense. And,
no doubt.
You know, like they did a lot to address it this offseason. And it's just a matter of, will it kind of come to fruition like they envision it being? But yeah, no, I agree. Like defensively, you feel a lot more certain just because of what Brent Venables has proven he's been able to build. There, just from a continuity perspective, just from a development perspective. Obviously, a lot of the same coaches are back for, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth year with Brent there. And then, you know, offensively, you just, like, you brought in Ben Arbuckle a year ago as, like, this young hotshot offense coordinator, and it just kind of didn't really click. Mm. You know, it did enough to help them get to the playoffs, but it, you know, it was still a – you know, middle bottom tier offense nationally. So yeah, there's just a lot of question marks on the offense side of the ball that need to be answered.
So let's get into that. Let's flip it. Biggest concern right now heading into the fall. Obviously, like, so Reds flip in July, media days are coming up, fall camp right at the beginning of August. Right now, if I were to say the season goes sideways, right, it's not the year they want to have, which I think everyone is feeling like double-digit wins back to the playoff. That's certainly what the goal is, or the hopes, right? If it doesn't happen, why? And to be clear, anyone listening on pod or watching on YouTube, we're not saying this is going to happen. We're not, you know, making predictions here. But what worries you the most? If Oklahoma has a bad year, again, not up to expectation, what do you think is going to be the thing that derails them? What's your biggest concern with this group right now?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the offensive line kind of raising the ceiling and for this offense. But I think, like, if the offense just kind of, like, peters out and isn't what it should be, or, you know, it's kind of like where it was last year, it's because the run game just has not kind of developed as needed. And you look at these, you know, personnel changes and everything that they did this offseason were done with a lot of intent on focusing on improving this run game. I mean, we heard it throughout the spring. Like, you bring in Dylan McCullough to take over that running back room. You obviously bring back your top two rushers from the position, but you kind of, you know, bring in some other pieces around them to kind of elevate the talent in that room and just the competition. Dylan McCullough, you know, veteran coach. He's, you know, worked with Kevin Wilson before. Obviously, Kevin Wilson's got a little bit bigger role now than he had maybe a year ago. You know, you bring in Jason Witten to help reshape that tight end room, where, you know, Hayden Hansen was like, yeah, they brought in a U-Haul for the tight end room, basically, with what they did this offseason. Sure. And then, you know, just the investment that they've put in that offensive line, retaining those core guys and bringing in an experienced SEC starter like Amarian Harris to kind of, you know, bolster that right tackle spot. Like, it's all done with the hopes of making sure that this run game is not, as Brent Venables put it before the spring, pathetic, which it was last year. And I think that if this offense falls short again in 2026, it's because the run game was just not able to get going to where they needed to be. And, you know, that, I think that is kind of the big look. Again, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm going to say, like, if there is something that concerns me about the offense, it's the running game not kind of living up to these expectations that they've kind of set through this offseason.
I agree totally. biggest concern. Well, what if they can't run the ball again? I agree completely. You know, because look, like we said, we like where the offensive line is. They've massively overhauled the tight end room with some tight ends that you believe are going to be able to set an edge better than what you had last year. But they didn't really do anything at running back. I mean, they did and they did, right? And they signed two freshmen who they're very excited about. You bring in one transfer. But the expectation is that, at least as of now, on June 29th, that Xavier Robinson and Torrey Blaylock are going to be your top two guys again. Can they stay healthier this time? Because those guys were very beat up last year. And so, look, again, I agree. I think they're going to be able to run the ball much better. But, like, what if they don't? We saw what that looked like last year where it didn't work, right? And so you're trying to go from an offense that couldn't run the ball at all to run the ball well. That's a big jump. Can they just be, like, okay, serviceable? I think you probably sign up for that after last year where it was a struggle at times. So I agree totally. Another one that's an obvious, this is a major doom pod here. But what if John Matera doesn't take a step? I think you're kind of really banking on that as well, right? And look, he was awesome in September last year, was never really the same post-injury. And we talked about that throughout the year. But at the same time, he didn't play well, right? He made bad decisions. What if, and again, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I think he's going to be much better, but we're doing our worst case scenarios right now. What if he's still turning the ball over a lot? What if he's still missing open guys? Like, what if he's kind of the same guy again, which is like good, but not great, which is what you're hoping for him to be. That would be bad, obviously, right? And I think John is putting in all the right, you know, the work and everything. And it's funny because he was in Omaha for the College World Series. And he's down the field. I remember thinking and saying to a couple people, like, God, he looks huge. He looks great. Like, he looks to be in phenomenal, like, shape. And he's out at Manning Passing Academy. And I'm sure you've seen the picture going viral of him looking ripped. And some of them are AI, but he is ripped. Like, he is huge. He looks in incredible shape. He's in a great headspace, clearly, and things like that. And so I think he's going to be good. I feel pretty good about where John Matera is as a quarterback and just both mentally and physically. But, again, if we're talking about biggest concerns, if he were to not take that step that Oklahoma's betting on him taking, that would be bad. Again, obvious statement, but that would not be good. So that's a big one for me.
Yeah, and to kind of take it a step further, it's like not even like what if he's like not as good as last year. It's like what if he gets hurt again?
What if he gets hurt again? Yes. Like,
you like what you saw from Whit Neubauer in the spring. Obviously, Bo Bentley had his ups and downs as a true freshman coming in. But it's like you don't necessarily have a insurance plan if, you know, John Matera, you know, has a freak injury like he did last year or was forced to miss significant time. It's like, can Whit Neubauer or Bo Bentley do enough to, you know, kind of keep the team afloat if something were to happen to John at quarterback? Mm-hmm. I don't know right now, just because we have not seen those guys really play at, you know, this level. Obviously, you know, Wick came from the FCS a year ago. Sure. Bo Bentley's a true freshman, just unproven guys. I think I liked what I saw from Whit Neubauer in the spring, but again, like I don't think that this offense would be as good with either of those guys as it obviously would be with John Matera. So I think, again, kind of just the quarterback depth question of it all is one of those other concerns that's just kind of looming there.
For sure. And then one more thing for me too, and this isn't certainly the biggest concern by any means, but it is a concern if you're talking about the season not going the way you want, is the schedule being very front-loaded. The fact that you have to go to Ann Arbor right away in week two, and you have to go to Athens in September, early in the season, before you really can kind of get your feet wet. You got some big, really tough road games. And I'm kind of reminded, and it's not a perfect comparison, because it's a different era. It was the 14 playoffs opposed to what they have now with the expanded 12 team. But like Oklahoma in 2016, Bob Stoops' final year, you know, they started that year. They lost their opener to Houston, and they lost to Ohio State a couple weeks later. Two losses, and they were playing catch-up. They were playing great football at the end of that year. They won the Big 12. They beat Auburn pretty soundly in the Sugar Bowl that season. That was Bob Stoops' final game outside of the Alamo Bowl where he stepped in as intern, five years later. But you get the idea. Like, those losses in September kind of tanked their whole year. And again, different era because it's expanded. But let's say they do go lose in Ann Arbor. Now it's like you kind of like have to win in Athens or you have no margin for error the rest of the way. That being said, if you made me pick right now on June 29th, I think they're going to win in Ann Arbor. If I had to pick right now, I just think they're better than a team than Michigan is. Mm-hmm. But the fact you have such a tough road game, two of them, that early in September, it's a little scary because, again, your margin of error could go away really quickly if you get off to a little of a slow start this year. Now, again, you have Mateer back year two. You know, you should be able to hit the ground running theoretically. But, you know, that's, again, not the biggest concern, but it is a concern. It's a thing because your season could be in a tough spot very quickly if you come out and get beat real early in the season like that, going out to Michigan in week two. So,
yeah, no, I was going to say, like, there is a world where Oklahoma can start 2-3. Because you have that Michigan game in week two.
They'll be underdogs in all three games, I think.
Yeah, 2 weeks later, you go to Georgia. You have the bye week, but then you have Texas in Red River. And, like, we've seen what that series has been like in recent years. Obviously, those losses that Oklahoma suffered were with, you know, poor quarterback situations mostly. You know, you'd think that a healthy John Mateer would give you a much better chance this time around. But yeah, there is a world. I'm not saying this is going to happen by any means, but there is a worst case scenario where Oklahoma starts year 2-3 with you know, three losses to, you know, power four teams, including an 0-2 start in the SEC, and then you're just, you know, again, it's an uphill climb where you have literally zero margin for error the rest of the way. You need to win out if that were to happen. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I'm with you. I think, like, if you made me pick right now, I think they beat Michigan. You know, that Georgia game is going to be incredibly tough on the road. That is a brutal SEC opener.
Sure.
But then having the week off to prepare for Red River, I think you're in a much better spot for that one. And, you know, I think that one's a little bit more of a coin flip at this point. But I think they'll get off to a 3-0 start before SEC play and just kind of like, okay, now you're in the SEC. Like, you know what you need to do to, you know, either get back to Atlanta or to put yourself in position for an at-large bid going into, you know, the final month of the year after that.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's a tough spot early in the year. I mean, to go out to Michigan in your second game of the season. So we'll see. And like I said, that 2016 team at the end of the year were playing great football. And they're one, when they expand the playoff and people kind of wonder like what OU team would have really benefited from that. That's a team that really stands out to me because the way they were playing at the end of the year was, you know, that with Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine, Baker Mayfield, they were rolling. And they obviously dominated that Sugar Bowl at the end of the year on a 10-game win streak, but the damage was done. And so it's a similar feeling. Like, they may be playing really good football at the end of the year because I feel like their schedule in October, November, while still tough in the SEC, is not as tough as maybe the first 2 years. But if you lose a bunch of games early, so I don't know. We'll see. And again, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I would lean that they beat Michigan right now. And if you could just win that Michigan game, you kind of go into Athens with a little bit of house money. Not that you're, you know, ever going to feel like you can't win a game at Oklahoma, but you're going in not feeling like all the pressure's on you. Where if you do lose to Michigan, you're kind of like, dang, we need to steal one now. We need to go try and make that up somewhere. So definitely, again, not the biggest concern, but a concern for sure. So the Sooners Illustrated podcast will be back after this short break. To wrap this up, just overall feeling for you right now with this team. It's June 29th. It's about to be July. We've got a long way to go, but just a little vibe check. We haven't, you know, has anything meaningfully changed for you from the end of spring to now? And just what's your feeling on what kind of a team this is? I think a lot of people are kind of wondering, and I'm sure it's going to come up at media days a lot, just kind of like what is a reasonable expectation for what this Oklahoma team is going to be in 2026? Where are you kind of at? Just a little vibe check.
Yeah, I don't think anything's like meaningfully changed from my perception of this team, like from the end of spring a couple months ago to now. The big thing for this team is like the schedule. Once again, like it's just one of the toughest schedules in the country. Look, I could see this team winning 9 games. I could see this team winning 10. I think, you know, that middle section of the schedule is like where they're really going to need to handle their business. You know, you come out of Red River, you got Kentucky, you got Mississippi State, you got South Carolina, then you have at Florida in, you know, year one under a new coach. And I think those are all games that you need to win. And then that final 3-game stretch is another one that's kind of a little tricky because you have an Ole Miss team that's coming off a playoff appearance, you know, even though they are technically in year one or a new coach too. Sure. You have a Texas A&M team coming off a playoff appearance, and then you're going to a Missouri team that's, you know, kind of in a rebuild, it feels like. I don't know. Like, I think this team should once again be in contention for a playoff spot, and I think that, you know, that should be the expectation for this team coming off of last year, believing that this offense will be better and should be better than it was a year ago. That's kind of where I was coming out of the spring. It's kind of where I still am, what are we, four weeks before media days and, a little more than a month before the start of fall camp.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if this was the season predictions pod, which we always do the Monday before the opener, I'd probably say like 10-2 again, if I had to guess. I mean, I think they're going to be a good team. I do feel like the defense is not going to be meaningfully worse, maybe slightly worse, could even be slightly better. I feel like it's going to be mostly about the same, if I had to guess, which is good. The defense was excellent last year. And I think the offense is going to be better. How could it not be, right? I mean, they've upgraded a tight end, wide receiver. Mateer, I feel like, is going to be better in year two. Hopefully they can run the ball better, like we were just talking about. I do tend to kind of think they're going to be pretty good, about a 10-win team-ish. Should be in the playoffs. Where that falls in the rankings, who knows, right? But, I think the expectation right now for an Oklahoma fan, you should be thinking playoff, and you should be thinking, we had every chance. We had a 3-score lead in the playoff game last year. Like, go win a playoff game this time and kind of see where the chips fall from there. But, I feel like it's fair to feel pretty optimistic and hopeful for what this team can be this season. And so, yeah, I thought that's perfectly valid. So we'll see. Like you said, media days are about, I think it's July 20th, I think. I might have just totally messed up that date. Something like that. About 3 weeks away, something like that. Out in Tampa. And I know Tom will be getting out there. We'll have a lot of coverage there. And then fall camp will be a couple of weeks shortly thereafter. So we're not that far away from kind of getting this thing really rolling. But lots more, kind of off-season content to quench your thirst between now and then. We'll continue to talk more about this team and kind of the season ahead on the next several Monday shows, continuing to kind of set the table for 2026. Looking forward to it. We're getting closer to getting this thing rolling. Baseball really helped cut down the summer because you came back and I got back from Omaha and I was like, man, fall camp's only, 5-6 weeks away. It's really not that far out. So good stuff. Before we go, I did want to get real quick a little basketball housekeeping on the way out. Obviously, we're still a ways off from hoops, but we did get the SEC slate for this upcoming season. Anything stand out to you, Tom, from this home and aways with Texas, Missouri, and Georgia? The teams that they go home and road with this year, Texas and Missouri seems to be kind of the norm. Those are kind of their rivals, if you will, that have been. I mean, Texas is obvious. Missouri has kind of become more of a thing since the SEC. Anything stand out to you? As we don't even have dates or anything. It's kind of the dog days. By the way, Brody Lusk has had some basketball kind of news and notes, little nuggets for our VIP members keeping up with that team. What's obviously a very big offseason, but anything jump out to you at all from the SEC slate?
Yeah, I mean, that road slate looks pretty daunting. And look, I know the SEC is deep.
It does.
But you're going to Alabama, you're going to Arkansas, you're going to Auburn, to Florida. Those are four really difficult places to play. The rest of it is, the rest of that road slate isn't too bad. Getting Kentucky at home, that should be a good draw for fans, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tennessee and Texas coming into, I think those should be some good, quality home opportunities for Oklahoma to get a big crowd and sure. Kind of get some excitement around this team. Because, we've discussed kind of what that non-conference slate looks like, where you're not getting a lot of marquee opponents at home necessarily. So I think the consolation there of getting, a Kentucky, getting a Tennessee, getting a Texas, even a Vanderbilt, Georgia, Missouri, I think those should draw some decent crowds if this team, is kind of where it hopes it should be and being competitive to, get off that bubble and, be kind of firmly in the field and, playing mm-hmm. meaningful basketball during that, second half of the year.
Yeah, it's not the flashiest home slate, but that might be okay, right? I mean, you got to win at home. That's the main thing that stands out. Like you said, I agree totally. The road games look pretty tough on paper. Look, we don't know how some of these teams are going to end up being, right? I mean, it's June. Some of these teams might end up being better than we think or worse than we think. But you look at it right now, just the schools on the page, it feels like, yeah, win your home games. Take care, which, again, maybe is a good thing that they have the more manageable games, if you will, at home. Protect your home court, try to pile up some of those SEC wins to get back in the tournament. Because like you said, I mean, Kentucky should be fun. Tennessee, Texas, like you said, from a crowd perspective. But, I mean, the rest of these, I mean, Georgia, LSU, Mississippi State, South Carolina. I don't know what Vanderbilt will be like this year. I know they have some key pieces back with their plays and others. Those all feel like home games you need to win. So it's kind of a, you know, double-edged sword a little bit, a kind of a half glass full in that it's not the most attractive slate for fans, some of the games, but they should be pretty winnable games. So, I mean, if you're looking for wins to try and get that SEC record up and get back to the tournament, feels pretty doable, you know, so I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. But
I think maybe the most important thing about the schedule is that they didn't draw Florida as their home and home team. It's like, because Florida's going to be a wagon. You're only playing them once. You don't need to play them twice.
Good call.
I think probably that might be one of the biggest consensuses in the sport going into the season, that this Florida team is something else. So we'll see what they look like. But yeah, I think, you know, drawing Florida just once, albeit on the road, it's kind of an important little factor for Oklahoma, knowing that you don't have to play them twice.
And with Kentucky, you don't have to worry about the Otega Owa dominating you, although he is back in town, got drafted by the Thunder, which is kind of a funny, crazy thing.
Well, drafted by the Miami Heat and then traded to the Thunder.
True. draft day trades are ridiculous, but so you don't have to worry about that. No Brandon Garrison on Kentucky anymore either. So those guys with Oklahoma ties come back and, you know, kind of lighting it up in the LNC. You don't have to worry about that this time. He is still in the SEC at Alabama, but they don't come to Norman this year. So,
And you did mention earlier, you know, before we started recording, Pop Isaac's going back to Texas one of the road games there. So there's a storyline there. But yeah.
That will be interesting. Yeah, Pop Isaac's going back to College Station. Obviously, whenever we get closer to it, we'll have a better idea in January or even February, whenever that game ends up landing. But like, is that going to be, is it a hostile situation or not really? I truthfully don't know. I'd have to talk to people closer to the A&M program to know how kind of that he was only there for a year. So like, is it that big a deal? I don't know. But anytime a guy goes back to where he just came from, you know, Oklahoma A&M, there is a, you know, a little bit of a rivalry there. That'll be a little spicy. Glad you brought that up. Yeah. Pop Isaac goes back to College Station. That'll be kind of interesting for sure. So, all right, I think that's it. We'll be back later this week with Colin and Brody. Catch up on some recruiting things. Big win for Oklahoma on the recruiting show with Bodie Sparrow last week. We'll be sure to get into that later this week. And it seems like you hear the Wolf-Graham decision coming very close. So we'll have some plenty of stuff to get into with those two guys later this week as we flip into July. Wednesday is July 1st. So we're getting, like I said, media day is right around the corner. Fall camp not that far away. Be sure to be with us over at Sooners Illustrated. We'll keep you entertained between now and the start of fall camp in about a month. But that's it for now. Tom and I'll be back next Monday. We'll continue to set the table for this season. That's it for Tom Green. I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you guys next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.